Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More, with Francisco Fragonio Pena. Active Citizens Build Resilient Cities.
The evolution of human history's urban environments can be defined in five words: hamlets, villages, towns, cities, and megacities. Urbanization refers to the housing boom, the population growth, urban sprawl, and rural urban migration. Urban areas have brought many positives to our society: economic development, job opportunities, better education, or entertainment. The numbers don't lie, the vast majority of humans choose to live in cities. According to the United Nations demographic projection, the urban population will be occupied by another 2.5 billion by 2050. Nevertheless, combined effects of urbanization also have contributed to environmental change and degradation, in particular the disruption of the water cycle, deforestation and impervious surface development, such as building roads, have clearly increased urban flooding. The rainwater cannot filter into soil anymore. Thus, the increasing amount of runoff has to be managed by the sewer system. When the drainage capacity is insufficient or is blocked by debris, the flow remains on the streets and causes physical and economic impacts. The combination of scientific innovations, proper policy frameworks, and financial backup help cities to mitigate floods. China, for instance, is taking the lead on implementing the concept sponge cities. This is a brand new approach that focuses on reusing the storm water in the urban environments. Can this integrated urban water management approach be the foundation of transitioning to smart green cities? Welcome to Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More podcast. My name is Nicola Palumbo, and thank you for being with us today. Honestly, I have never heard the term sponge cities in my life. Francisco, is this really happening, or is it just a fancy name to describe effective stormwater management practices?
Good morning, Nicola, Radiofonica, ladies and gentlemen. Sponge cities are a relatively new and easy concept to understand.
Got an idea!
Think about a forest or a non-urbanized area. The soil is the sponge. While you pour water on it, the dried sponge absorbs the water. The water is distributed to the sponge and stays there unless it's squeezed.
Right.
But what happens if you drop water in a bunch of rocks? The water is not going to be absorbed. Therefore, the water will splash, move within the rocks, and the water spot will just get bigger and bigger, while the sponge has the ability to absorb water as much as possible.
This is the same case with cities. Mostly buildings, sidewalks, driveways, and parking lots cover the soil layer.
Let's have a closer look on the water cycle in urban areas. Nicola, what happens when the precipitation falls on a city?
The concrete layer obstructs the water?
Yes. This means that most of the water does not infiltrate the subsoil and creates an accumulation of surface runoff. When the water moves across the catchment to the downstream, it increases the speed, which can cause damage to infrastructure and disrupt the local economic activities. The drainage system, if designed correctly, intercepts the flow, minimizing the risk of urban flooding. Then, drainage tunnels or storage tanks take the captured volume discharge to the river or harbor. I'm going to explain the concept once again in numbers. Let's use the forest as an example. From 100% of the rainfall, 50% infiltrates in the soil as shallow or deep infiltration. Then you have 10% runoff, and the remaining 40% is transferred from the land to the atmosphere as evapotranspiration. Now, in a city with at least 75% of impervious cover, infiltration drops to 15%, while runoff increases to 55%. In my opinion, an easy formula to calculate the percentage of urban flooding in a city could be gray infrastructure minus vegetation cover multiplied by a factor based on the effectiveness of the stormwater system and infiltration.
What are the side effects connected to disruption of the water cycle and urbanization?
That's a good question. I can mention a few.
Go ahead.
Well, the first that comes to mind are urban microclimates.
Are you referring to the urban heat island effect?
Yes. urban heat island are urban areas that are a few degrees warmer than surrounding areas, depending on a number of conditions, including the population density and infrastructure of built environment. Besides CO2 emissions, one of the reasons behind the rise of temperatures in cities is the reflected solar radiation of black pavements and roofs.
I get it now. These materials have the ability to store enormous amount of heat, so all this heat is trapped during the day and is released at night.
Think about it. Lower rainfall infiltration means lower levels of groundwater recharge, which can result in groundwater depletion or water salinity if the aquifer is exploded. In other hand, a decrease of groundwater levels can have an impact on the river's stream flows, which can lead to a decrease in fish populations.
How cities are exactly tackling urban flooding and heat island effect issues?
Definitely, green solutions are one option, but in my opinion, allowing dialogue and cooperation between experts to work across disciplines has been undervalued and not considered enough. I want to tell you a brief story. The Dutch are viewed as the masterminds in water management. Their expertise dates back to 800 years of experience. After the North Sea flood of 1953, which, if I remember correctly, was their worst water-related disaster in their history, they realized that they must respect Mother Nature. Since then, an unprecedented paradigm shift in water management practices and culture was adopted in the Netherlands.
Right. They couldn't beat the water, so they learned how to live, to coexist with it.
Two of my favorite quotes in The Art of War by Sun Tzu, a famous general and philosopher of ancient China, are: "If he is in superior strength, evade him," and "The greatest victory is that which requires no battle." This is exactly what the Dutch did. That's why other nations ask for advice and expertise on how to replicate their works at home. Right after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans back in 2006, an initiative called the Dutch Dialogues was created to bring local and international experts together to learn more about the Dutch approach, with the goal to create a more resilient city.
Cooperation and sharing best practices can only improve the cities and citizens' quality of life. Now it is time to go listen to My Voice 120. We will be back very soon with Communicating, Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More.
Hello, my name is Matteo Rolle. I'm an Italian PhD student in the Department of Civil and Environmental Engineering of Politecnico di Torino. The topic of my research is the study of the virtual water content in agricultural products, future scenarios of water use in agriculture, changing drivers that influence agricultural performance, and six solutions to reduce blue water consumption. Virtual water means water that is virtually contained in a product, or in other words, the water used during the production chain. Blue water is irrigation water collected artificially from shallow or deep water basins, while green water is irrigation water from rainfall. It is important to take into account the strong spatial variability of virtual water content in the world, which depends on the different type of crops, the different climatic contexts, and the technological factors. Virtual water content depends mainly on crop evapotranspiration and agricultural yield, two parameters that are not independent of each other but highly sensitive to climate change impacts. In today's world, scientists can access to unlimited amount of data and cutting-edge technology to give answers to complex problems. Remote sensing and satellite imagery are key players in developing water efficiency approaches to satisfy the population needs. Water resources are not limitless. If we don't pay attention to population growth and find more efficient techniques for agriculture, water shortages are likely to happen at a major scale. Therefore, it is essential to study optimization processes on the use of blue water. If you're interested in virtual water, please contact me at matteo.rolle@polito.it or visit the project's website water2food.org, an initiative coordinated by Professor Francesco Laio from Politecnico di Torino. And remember, active citizens build resilient cities.
We are back with Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More. Before the break, you mentioned that green solutions are one way to tackle urban flooding and heat island effect issues. How come?
Vegetation and trees do not reflect the sunlight. In fact, they block the solar radiation and increase the shade, cooling the air by evapotranspiration. Green roofs, for example, are excellent insulators for homes, keeping your home colder and can helping you save money by lowering the level of AC required during summer. On the same note, green roofs absorb the rainfall. It prevents the water to reach the pavement. On a single basis, that green roof is not going to have an impact on the city flooding. It goes unnoticed. Now, picture a city full of green roofs. A considerable amount of water will be stored in the soil, reducing the probability of flooding in neighborhoods. Moreover, it could be nice to plant on your own property fresh vegetables or have a garden.
A video on YouTube published by the Tech Insider introduces the sponge concrete, a concrete created by tarmac that has the capacity to absorb water. Have you seen it?
Indeed, it is called Top Mix Permeable, and it's labeled as the ultimate concrete solution for surface and stormwater management. The technical specifications sheet highlights an absorption capacity of 3,330 liters per minute and its colder temperature than traditional asphalt. Nevertheless, this solution, just like the green roofs, requires a considerable amount of financial resources.
And who is backing the Spoon City initiative?
The Chinese government. As a result of population growth and urbanization, water-related disasters have caused serious trouble to the country for decades. Flooding leads as the number one threat, but it was not until Beijing experienced a large-scale flooding disaster in 2012 that they decided to change their approach, the paradigm shift I was talking about earlier in flood prevention. I'm actually really impressed by their ambitious plan's ambition. Currently, they have 30 pilot cities all around the country. The complexity of implementing the strategy is extremely high, considering that nobody has done it before. There are no regulations or policies on how to make sponge cities work, and the cities already exist, so the effectiveness of these practices, the green roofs, the increase of green areas and the restoration of waterways, floodplains and natural drainage systems are linked to how well urban planners redevelop and reorganize cities.
To finish the show, what is your opinion about this project?
I like the idea. I also believe it is too early to talk about preliminary results. Until cities don't adopt an integrated whole system thinking approach, we will not be able to visualize the outcomes of the Sponge City project.
In today's show, we talk about the sponge cities and the effects of urbanization in the water cycle. Citizens might not understand the sponge city concept yet, but we definitely appreciate the parks and a closer connection to nature closer from their home. Stay tuned for our next show, Science Podcasts.
Get to know our work a little better by visiting our social media platforms, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram, for WaterDoc or Francisco Febreño Peña. And remember, active citizens
build resilient cities.
Goodbye.
Communicating Disaster Risk Reduction Science and More with Francisco Febreño Peña. Active citizens build resilient cities.